knowledge fight. Dan and Jordan, I am sweating. KnowledgeFight.com. It's time to pray.
I have great respect for Knowledge Fight.
Knowledge Fight. I'm sick of them posing as if they're the good guys, saying we are the bad guys. Knowledge Fight.
Dan and Jordan.
Knowledge Fight.
I need money. Andy in Kansas. Andy in stop it. Andy in Kansas. Andy. It's time to pray. Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a Christian caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
Knowledge Fight.
KnowledgeFight.com. I love you.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Knowledge Fight. I'm Dan.
I'm Jordan.
We're a couple dudes like to sit around, worship at the altar of Selene, and talk a little bit about Alex Jones.
Oh, indeed we are, Dan.
Yep.
Dan.
What's up?
I have a quick question for you, sir.
Mm-hmm.
What is your bright spot today?
My bright spot today is actually like a couple of things that we've kind of forgotten to even touch on in the course of like just news that's happened.
Sure.
That like, we've been busy with other stuff.
We've been busy.
And so the first thing is that Nick Fuentes got subpoenaed by the January 6th committee.
Suck it, Fuentes!
I think that'll be fun to see what happens with that.
Yeah, that will be nice.
But the larger bright spot is that, this should have come up somehow, but it just there was no natural place where it would have. Dr. Group is now a piss doctor.
What?
You didn't know about this?
What happened? Dr. Group is a piss doctor?
Dr. Group is the guy who was advising the QAnon guy who came out and was talking about piss drinking as being a cure for COVID.
Wait, Dr. Group. Dr. Group.
Yes,
Dr. Edward Group. Veterinarian Supreme.
No, chiropractor.
Chiropractor Supreme, sorry.
Yeah, the other
that
one. Wallach is the veterinarian.
Right. I keep thinking veterinarian because there's no way a chiropractor should be anywhere near medical information. Well, okay.
He's a guy who does urine therapy now. He's moved on from the happy waters of being Alex's
buddy. These are slightly less happy waters.
He calls it, I believe, like the
ammonia-laden waters.
The golden nectar or something like that.
Yeah. Oh, man.
So it's just interesting and fun when we see like these side characters of yore pop back up in unexpected places.
it's like we're on our sixth season of the show. We got a third season cast member coming back up in a cameo.
Anyway, Dr. Group, piss doctor.
Yes, piss doctor.
So that's my bright spot.
That is a great... Not as good as a spin doctor, but a piss doctor is pretty good.
No.
My bright spot.
Two princes pissing before you. What I said now. You piss on him, your father will disown you. You need his help now.
I knew I shouldn't have brought them into this. My bright spot.
Got the Jimmy Olsen yellows.
I'm going to power through this, man.
Not going to be able to.
Yeah, I'm going to do it.
Little piss can't be wrong.
Earl Sweatshirt has a new album.
All right.
It's great.
That's great.
It's called Sick. It's fantastic.
Awesome. I'll have to give that a listen. I have not checked that out yet.
Yeah.
But he's quite a talented musician.
His last one was basically a companion to Mad Villain, for God's sakes. It was almost one-to-one, could have been part of it. And this one is great.
You're very lucky that I can't think of any more Spin Doctor songs.
I really saw it in the back of your eyes. Yeah. Like, every word I speak, you're like, is that the one I can turn into a Spin Doctor?
So, hey, Jordan,
yes.
We're going to be talking about January 17th, 2022 here today. We got some very interesting things that end up happening, and we have a return of a certain somebody we haven't talked about in quite a while.
Lawyer up, liberals.
Uh-oh. Roger Stone is coming in with a head of steam.
All right.
So I'm very excited to get down to business on this episode, but before we do, let's take a little moment to say hello to some new wonks. So first, Frank the Turtle, thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thanks, Frank.
Oh, and this is a little bit on theme. Next, Turtle Soup, thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you very much.
Next, shout out to whoever registered as my Grandpa Jerry. Hearing Jordan say, thanks, Grandpa Jerry, made me and my mom cry. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thanks, Grandpa Jerry.
Oh, boy. You're going to make them cry again.
That's the whole idea.
So, next, we have a couple of technocrats in the mix. So, first, Kyle, thank you so much. You are now a technocrat. And Delta Foxtrot 2, thank you so much. You are now a technocrat.
I'm a policy wonk. I have risen above my enemies. I might quit tomorrow, actually. I'm just going to take a little breaky now. a little breaky for me. And then we're going to come back and I'm going to start the show over. But I'm the devil. I got to be taken off the air. I'm doing all this. Blah, 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 blah. Fuck you. Fuck you. I got plenty of words for you, but at the end of the day, fuck you and your New World Order, and fuck the horse you rode in on, and all your shit. Maybe today should be my last broadcast. I mean, maybe I'll just be gone a month, maybe 5 years. Maybe I'll walk out of here tomorrow, and you never see me again. That's really what I want to do. I never want to come back here again. I apologize to the crew and the listeners yesterday that I was legitimately having breakdowns on air. I'll be better tomorrow.
So, thank you so much. We'll see if Alex is better today.
Yes, thank you very much. God, that's going to play at the, I swear, if that isn't what plays on the career retrospectives for Alex like 10 years from now, that's, it's a perfect encapsulation of his whole career.
Well, I think I could actually even add to it if, you know, before the retrospective, if people want me to beef this up a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We got, you got time.
I can add at least 6 more minutes to that of him having outbursts.
Oh, yeah.
So here, Jordan, is an out of context drop from today's show.
Gwee-gwee, Binky, and Baba. That's right.
Yeah, that's right.
Gwee-gwee.
Gwee-gwee, Binky, and Baba.
Yeah.
Oh,
he's talking
right about
the names that his kids have used for blankets.
That sounds better.
Because he was making fun of masks and people like wearing masks, and he's like, it's their Gwee-gwee. And then he realized he had to explain himself.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. that's not as much fun.
That's what his child taught.
That's a real embarrassing moment when Gwee-gwee. You have to explain yourself after you say something like that.
But he handles it with aplomb and grace.
Excellent.
So here we go. We're going to start off as Alex starts off. And this is weird.
And as much as we have a right with this illegitimate government under the Declaration of Independence to throw off these forms of government, we don't have the organization and the statesmen, the leadership like they had back then in 1776, and they were still fighting an uphill battle, and they were fighting a system that wasn't one-tenth as evil, not even one-hundredth. Hell, King George was pretty good compared to these people. He was just dominating them and making them go through him to be able to do business, and they didn't like it, and I understand that.
So Alex is trying to have a really interesting, weird, middle path about the Sixth and whether or not we need to overthrow the government.
Sure, which we do.
Well, but maybe not.
But maybe not.
But Stuart Rhodes just got arrested, so maybe not.
Maybe it's a bad idea at this point in time.
Maybe I should be very clear that I'm not into this shit.
But maybe I should also leave it open.
Also, it's super weird for somebody like Alex, whose like entire personality is based on, like, I don't know.
Listen, King George was a great guy.
He's basically just verbally masturbates about the Revolutionary War every day on air. And for him to be like, you know, King George wasn't so bad.
What, are you going to be mad at King George?
Complete
badass.
Also, I don't know exactly if his characterization of what King George was doing that the colonists and the revolutionaries had a problem with.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's exactly accurate, but... But either way, Alex is in a place where he's like, maybe I should walk some of this stuff back. Maybe I should be a little bit careful.
Heat's getting up.
With the breakdown of civilization and with the breakdown of society,
sure,
the last thing we need is any type of paramilitary garbage. So I'm going to tell everybody out there who's in a militia or who is in Oath Keepers or who is in Proud Boys, a lot of the ideas and things espoused are good. The militia's in the Constitution. It's in the Bill of Rights. I'm not saying you're individually bad because you want to train and be prepared to defend your country. That's a normal male instinct and good. And you should train to protect yourself and your family. And you should try to work with your sheriff's department and police department and others. And you should use your influence at city council and school boards and everywhere to be heard. And you should train to defend this republic. But I know for a fact they've got camps set up in places like North Carolina and Kentucky and Virginia, where they are recruiting young people online and others using Q-type BS, that there's a big uprising about to happen, and you really work for Trump, and he's secretly going to do this, to launch some type of new attack that will be much more violent than the Capitol fiasco before the midterms to bring in real martial law. And it's our number one mission to stop that.
I am a non-attorney spokesperson representing a team of lawyers who...
Interesting. So it's really weird, this timing for Alex to jump off being super into militia and revolutionary paramilitary stuff.
Super weird.
Alex is just talking shit, but I think he's keenly aware there are a ton of really heavily armed, dangerously prone towards violence militia members out there who've been fed a steady diet of ideas about how the globalists are going to take out the leadership, then they're going to come to your house to kill your family. He knows that he was a part of amping that up and banging that drum constantly, and now probably the highest profile militia leader in the country has been arrested for a seditious conspiracy, and it sounds like maybe Alex has read the indictment by this point and he knows that Stuart's fucked.
Yeah.
Alex isn't so stupid as to not understand that there are violent lunatics out there who are waiting for the sign to jump off and start shooting people, who will likely see Stuart getting arrested as the sign that they were waiting for. I hope that there aren't too many of these sorts of folks and that they'll end up choosing not to hurt people, but I think that the possibility is there. So I feel like this is kind of why Alex is predicting this kind of false flag and sending a message that he isn't into paramilitary stuff. I think it's because he's really worried at this point that there's a possibility that there will be some paramilitary-style reprisals for Stuart's arrest, and he'd rather not have to deal with those very clear consequences of the last 13 years of his broadcast career. Either that, or Alex actually has proof of Q-style commando camps in North Carolina, which are full of people recruited off the internet to carry out attacks, which will then get blamed on patriots. I would say that if he has evidence like he claims he does, he better present that shit right now, because it would be a gigantic news story. And it shouldn't be hard to prove, either. If it's real, since the recruitment's being done online on the internet, that should have left a trail that Alex can show pretty easily. If Alex claims that his number one mission is to stop this supposed uprising, that would probably be what he does, but the reality is that Alex doesn't want to stop anything. He just wants to lay some groundwork, so if there are some right-wing attacks, he'll be able to point to this bullshit to insist that they were actually false flags. He's interested in harm reduction, but only the reduction of harm that would come to himself.
Right. Right.
That's the game that he's playing here with the I'm not into paramilitary
stuff. Right, right, right. Get the fuck out of here.
Hey, militia guys, stop being so militia-y.
I do like that it is that one kind of thing of like you've created such an imaginary world that you can't reason people down from this. So you have to engage with them in the imaginary world of like, hey, don't commit any violence, not because it's wrong, but because there's a secret magical organization that's trying to take advantage of you for committing violence. And you're like, oh, well, that makes sense.
But I mean, it would stand to reason that, like, I guess if you know yourself to have not been part of an internet Q camp commando thing, then what is the problem with you committing violence?
Because they don't know if because you might get your buddies taken in.
I guess so.
You know?
I don't know. Anyway, it's all just the same thing he does all the time whenever he's, you know, pretty worried that the heat is a little too high.
Covering his own ass.
So it's been a while since we've heard Alex get really mad about Brian Stelter.
It has been a while.
And today is the day that changes.
It's about time.
Alex is really mad at Brian Stelter, but he sets a possibly impossible goal for himself.
Okay.
All right, everybody knows that I don't like Brian Stelter, and he's everything I don't want to be. Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. And normally when I start getting into something Stelter's doing, because he is the mouthpiece of Jeff Zucker, he is the mouth of the New World Order, what you hear is a script he's fed. I start attacking how he looks and just how he gives me the heebie-jeebies. I'm not going to do that next segment. I'm going to play what he has to say and then fully debunk it.
Come on.
To show you how gaslighting works. This is going to be very important coming up next segment. And I'm going to refrain from my normal attacks on him. Because, again, I'm trying to be more professional here because the time is just, things are too dangerous right now.
Things are too dangerous for me to make fun of Brian Stelter anymore. It's just, look. We all had our fun.
Hey, you know, once they get roads for gun caches all around the Capitol, you know that they can't allow people to make fun of Stelter anymore.
Well, they can allow it, but Alex has a higher calling now.
That's true.
And he's got to be very serious.
Well, it's bigger than that.
And so we'll see.
It's bigger than hip-hop, that's for sure.
We'll see if he's able to hold his tongue from... I think you can tell already he can't.
Yeah, there's no chance of that.
So before he gets to his piece on Stelter, Alex has to do one of the things that he does best, and that is tell completely fictional stories about interactions that he has with people on the street.
Love it.
And I'm just telling everybody in the military and the bureaucracy and everybody, I'm not looking for a fight with you. You're under as much attack as I am. And I saw a beautiful black lady walking out of a grocery store yesterday, And I said, hey, you're in the Army. What are you in? And she told me, and I said, have you taken the shot? She said, oh, man, they made me take the second one. Worst thing I've ever felt. I said, what, brain fog? She goes, oh, yeah, I'm just now getting over it. And she said, oh, and my stomach hurts so bad. You know, I said, oh.
Okay.
She said, yeah. Period. Because we know, and most women that take it have serious menstrual problems.
Amazing.
For continually. It's like, if you took it 6 months ago, you've had menstrual problems for 6 months. If you took it a year ago, you've had it for a year. They're like, well, we hope it's only temporary. I mean, again, I see a woman walking out in her Army uniform out of a store with some bags of groceries. I'm like, hey. And I'm not trying to brag. It's true. She goes, yeah, you're Alex Jones. I've seen you on Joe Rogan. It's always Joe Rogan. He's so huge. But the point was this was a beautiful woman. I suppose she's black.
That was because, the point.
You know, they always mention what race somebody is, but
no, you do. You always do. But like, this is wild. The notion that Alex walked up to this person and like, hi, I'm Alex Jones from InfoWars. Talk to me about your period.
Yeah. Tell me all about your menstrual cramps. I mean, just
this never happened.
You know, it's amazing how you all three words, beautiful, black, and lady, all fine together. When they come out of Alex's mouth in that order, I am deeply uncomfortable.
It feels weird.
Yeah.
But like, even I think fairly charismatic, welcoming, nice people, I think, wouldn't end up having conversations with people about their menstrual cycle.
I think most
people would not have those conversations with random people on the street.
Generally speaking, that's the case.
Yeah. And all that stuff that he's talking about menstrual changes from vaccine is just a complete misrepresentation of a study that he never actually read.
Yeah.
And this conversation is totally imaginary, but he just keeps talking about it.
I'm looking at this lady. I just felt like asking her. I felt like saying, hey, how are you doing? Did you take the shot? She goes, oh, woo. She went, woo. I'm just now starting to get over it. I said, oh, I mean, that's how real this is, that I just randomly am walking into a grocery store. And the first person I talk to has got hurt by it. That's not statistics I'm reading in some document which show it's off the chart bad. That's not top scientists telling me. That's the first person I see in a uniform.
Again, this never happened. This person didn't exist. This conversation is fake.
That is the flimsiest bullshit.
Yeah. There's something interesting here, though, that Alex brings up at the end that I want to touch on. He seems to be expressing that the fact that he talked to someone who had an adverse event from a vaccination would constitute stronger evidence about vaccine side effects than data. This seems really weird, and it's obviously not true, but it's actually completely true for how Alex engages with information. The way that Alex presents information is entirely story-based, and data isn't really all that compelling as a story.
It's hard to read, too.
Dry,
yeah,
numbers.
Oh, boo, what do you even add with them?
Anecdotal stories about people, real or imagined, who have supposedly been hurt by vaccines, those kinds of stories are super compelling, and he's trained his audience to put far more weight on stories that someone could just be making up than they would on data. That's a really big problem for the so-called information war, because it's really more of a storytelling war.
Yeah.
That's what he should call his show.
Storytime telling war hour.
Right.
Yay!
The Moth Story Slam War.
Oh, man. Drag Queen Sad Hour.
So, look, man, there's people who are putting it out there that vaccines are safe, but wouldn't you know, all of them are getting paid.
Hundreds of thousands of influencers are getting paid billions of dollars. Pfizer's paid out about $10 billion, they now admit, just in the last year. So that number is about 6 months behind. Part of last year, part of the year before last, and then part of last year. Imagine how much they've spent now. $10 billion.
From everything I can tell, this is a completely made-up stat and story. There have been attempts to use social media influencers to encourage people to get vaccinated, but that wasn't being done by Pfizer. That was done by the government. One of the more high-profile examples of this was in Colorado, where the governor hired a PR company called Idea Marketing to handle all of the public-facing aspects of spreading vaccine information. Their contract was for $8.8 million, and it appears that they enlisted 120 influencers on social media, paying them up to $1,000 a month to promote vaccines. According to their planning documents, which are publicly available, they budgeted a total of $286,500 for compensation going to influencers. This is less than that was paid for Google ads or for YouTube ads, and it was a bit less than they allocated even for Spanish-speaking cable channels. This was last year, but in December 2020, there were similar stories about influencers in New Jersey making money to do similar stuff. This was more or less the equivalent of a PSA in our new social media space, and these people do have to disclose that they're making paid posts, like they do if a company pays them to promote a product. There's a flip side of this that I'm sure Alex doesn't want to touch, and that's in May 2021. News broke that online influencers were being approached to spread misinformation about the Pfizer vaccine. According to a New York Times piece, Mirko Drachmann, a German YouTuber who comments on health issues and has 1.5 million subscribers, was approached by a mysterious agency called FAZZE, F-A-Z-Z-E, about being involved in a, quote, information campaign about Pfizer deaths. The aim was to make sensational claims about the vaccine's deadliness and about how everyone was covering it up. Essentially, it was an information campaign to do Alex's show.
Yeah, it was propaganda.
Simultaneously, Leo Grassett, a French health YouTuber with over a million followers, was contacted by the same agency with the same offer. Their revelations led to other influencers coming out and saying that they had also been approached. The agency is actually really shady, too, and according to this article, it's kind of hard to tell, like, what it is exactly. Leo Grassett posted screenshots of the messages he got from a person at the company who identified himself as Anton. Quote, Anton had been willing to pay for 45 to 60 second videos on Instagram, TikTok, or YouTube warning that the Pfizer vaccine was deadly. Anton also asked him to, quote, act like you have the passion and interest in this topic while avoiding terms advertising and sponsored in posts.
Yeah.
Quote, the material should be presented as your own independent view, the pitch said. Things get a bit weirder, though, and by August 2021, Facebook had a move to kick the FAZZE agency off the platform. More information was coming out that it was a, quote, subsidiary of a UK-registered marketing firm whose operations were primarily conducted from Russia.
Strainbridge Randolitica!
This obviously isn't to say that this was a Russian government plot or anything, but it does provide a very strong basis to conclude that this was a foreign misinformation campaign that targeted people in other countries. Also, apparently, at one point, some of the campaign was to spread the narrative that the Pfizer vaccine was turning people into chimpanzees.
Ooh, that's probably true, though. So, that's probably true.
Good stuff.
There was an episode of Cowboy Bebop about that.
Anyway, this kind of thing is happening, and it's more insidious than PSAs that are being done by social media influencers who disclose that they're doing PSAs. But Alex doesn't care about this sort of story at all, because the misinformation that's being spread is in line with the message that he wants to amplify. There's no good explanation for this agency's action, so the best way to navigate the story is just to ignore it and then exaggerate or lie about what the people you don't like are doing. That's the game.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I like that. I like that company. I like that idea of such complete, like, hey, either capitalism's going to work or it's not, you know? I'm offering you a bunch of money. You can either say no and there's no consequences for me. I'm some random dude in Russia. Or you can take my money and I get what I want. Like, that is a completely zero-risk situation for
them. I'm not entirely sure, based on the information that's available, what the deal is and how actually, like, real the ability to follow through with these offers may have been.
Sure.
You know,
it sounds weird as shit.
Yeah, I'm a little bit confused about it, but I also know that some people go along with things and then get screwed by deals that never pay off.
Yeah.
And so some things may fall into that camp.
Yeah, the first thing that I thought of whenever you told me about them was just like those roommate scams where they're like, "Oh yeah, I'll pay you the first and second month's rent, but I'm out of state right now. Can you send me a little up front so then I can
Mm-hmm.
That's got that vibe all over it.
Yep. We need to get to the news now. Alex realizes, like, it's time, baby.
We've already blasted through 30-plus minutes of this transmission today. I need to start digging into the news and covering it all for you here today. But the first big thing I want to hit is Brian Stelter, which means the mouth of the establishment, attacking Glenn Beck. And I've been a big critic of Glenn Beck, because he said I was making up the FEMA camp plans back under Obama to put Americans in camps. I got real Army documents. A few years later, the Army admitted they were real, that Obama was preparing to put Americans, quote, in re-education camps, which is a Soviet brainwashing term, a brainwashing camp.
That's not accurate. But although I do like how he keeps calling, like, Stelter the mouth of the establishment, which is in opposition to Jimmy Hart, the mouth of the South.
Yeah.
You got to keep those things distinct. They're not the same.
No.
And this has been my wrestling reference of the day.
There you go.
Check that box off.
There we go. Yep. That's on the whiteboard right there.
So, yeah, I guess we got to talk about Stelter and what he's been up to. But first, Alex has got to tip his cap to the people who are really doing the good work.
So here's the good news. We got Tulsi Gabbard. We got Glenn Beck. We got... the names go on forever. Tucker Carlson and Joe Rogan and everybody else and Congress people on both sides going, hey, this is a global government plan. They admit it. They want to shut society down and take over. And they're using the virus to bring in a world ID. And if people get that, then we'll understand that all the fear mongering and control is about putting us in a permanent prison. And then they won't be able to do this anymore.
So I guess it's a COVID is here to bring in martial law type day, not a they're going to kill us all of day. That's interesting. Also, Tulsi Gabbard is getting to be a little annoying.
That was a great list.
Yeah.
That was a great list. It goes on and on.
That list also, like, it makes me think of, like, hey, what happened to that narrative where Jack Dorsey left Twitter so he could support Alex?
I remember that.
What happened
to that? Remember that one?
Yeah.
Oh, that one was fun.
That seems to have materialized.
No, I think he's joined the team that's killing everybody again now, though.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
So Alex has some other people who are heroes, and we have some bad news about one of these heroes.
We are here, and I don't know if Roger Stone's going to be able to come on. He's had really bad COVID for 2 weeks. He says the sickest he's been in his life. He sounds like Darth Vader. And I talked to him for 30 minutes yesterday, and I said, you got to come on the air. He said, I'll come on at 12:30 my time. It's 11:30 our time. And he's so sick right now, he's trying to decide whether he's going to come on. He said, I sound terrible, but I really want to say all this. And I understand I've been through what he's been through. It's real. It's not fun. It's next level. We'll see if he's with us next hour.
So remember all those descriptions of how Alex is saying Roger's doing, because it doesn't match at all how he sounds or is acting when he finally does show up.
Great.
Also, like, that term next level is like, Alex just uses that for whatever he wants. Like, Trump is next level.
It's next level.
His supplements are next level.
Whatever level you're on, they're on the next one.
Roger's COVID's next level.
It's the most COVID anybody's ever had.
So now that this has gotten out of the way, the tip of the cap to Tulsi Gabbard's and the announcement that Roger has COVID.
Yeah.
We get to Stelter.
Are you sure it's not polonium poisoning this time?
Well, that's what made me suspicious that he's faking it. But I think that he might not be. For some other reasons.
Sure.
He might be demonstrating some new problems.
Okay.
I will give this just a spoiler alert. He seems to be slurring his speech a little bit.
Okay. All right.
That was not something that was a hallmark of his previous appearances. And that is something that could be associated with damage that could be done by COVID.
Sure, sure, absolutely.
So I'm hesitant to call this a fake thing, although Roger makes it very difficult with his stunts that he pulls.
Yeah, there are some people on the planet for whom guilty until proven innocent should probably be the rule.
Yeah. So here we go. Stelter time.
Brian Stelter does this 8-minute report. I'm not going to air the whole thing. I'll air a few minutes, but it's the same repeat over and over again. Saying, it's just insane. Glenn Beck has written this book, and Tucker Carlson doesn't even question him about there's an elite using the lockdown to get rich. That's ridiculous. And then it's a war on little people. Yeah, that's why the small businesses is open or closed, but everything else is open. That's box store.
Alex is missing the point of Stelter's piece here. The notion that the global elites are using COVID to reshape society and crush the little guy, as Stelter puts it in his piece, it's a very small throwaway line that he uses to describe Glenn's book as a whole. The piece is actually entirely about a specific claim that Beck makes on Tucker's show about officials in Washington State meeting to plan internment camps to put unvaccinated people in, and how Tucker doesn't ask any questions or push back at all, but just listens with his wide-eyed, quizzical look that he uses when weirdos lie to his audience. Stelter's take on that is the central thing that Alex needs to refute if he's going to cover this video, which we'll see if he does when he actually gets down to business on this. Also, really, Alex needs to update his talking points. Does he really expect to pass off a narrative where only big box stores are allowed to be open at this point? Like, that's just something he remembers saying from like a year and a half ago that just he doesn't realize isn't true anymore. It was even iffy back then.
Yeah, I don't know what it is that's part or not part or that narrative whenever you start.
That's just muscle memory.
When you start digging deep back in there, you don't know what's still part of that. And he doesn't.
No.
So it's just going to come out.
But.
Yeah, it's like, oh, I threw up a little bit of my own bullshit.
Like a demon coming out of the CERN collider. Narrative just popped back up.
Trying to get you.
Yep. So Alex seems to be interested primarily on focusing on the wrong point.
And then Beck does the same thing I just did, messes up what he's saying, and he goes, this is the best read. I mean, the best book I've written. He goes, oh, look, you didn't write it. You ghost wrote it.
There's a part at the beginning of the Stelter piece where he's saying that he suspects that Glenn Beck may not have written the book because Beck starts with, this is the best book I've ever read. I mean, wrote. I wrote, yeah. And so Stelter's is making fun of that.
Yeah.
Which I can tell you, with Glenn Beck, he probably wrote a lot of it and had somebody put together in quotes and then did have some of it finished up and edited, but that is.
Oh, so he did.
So he did have a ghostwriter.
Yeah, so, okay.
It doesn't matter. The point is, he's exposing, I've read the synopsis, I've read the book yet, the whole globalist operation, how they did it, what's unfolding, you name it. And so instead of addressing any facts or any real things in the book, he just says it's made up. Like, oh, with no evidence, Glenn Beck has got this book about the Great Reset. And it's number one, of course, because it's just made up.
Stelter didn't say that the Great Reset as an idea is all made up. He does say that the Washington State internment camp thing is made up, though, but you can see here how Alex is intentionally misrepresenting what Stelter's piece was about so he can get mad about it without exposing his audience to the actual point that Stelter was making. If you just insist that he was claiming without providing any proof that Beck's book is all made up, the audience can internalize that, and if the claim is that Stelter was saying that the Great Reset is completely made up, the audience can conclude that Stelter is an intentional liar, and this critique of Tucker's shitty journalism should just be ignored. At the end of the day, Alex is basically just trying to provide cover for Tucker, like some sad underling taking offense at anything bad that's said about the boss. It's weak.
Yeah.
Stelter says that this specific thing that Glenn Beck talks about is completely made up, and that is the story about Washington State preparing internment camps for unvaccinated people. And that's because that's totally made up. This has to do with a piece of legislation passed in 2003 in Washington titled WAC 246-100-040. This legislation allows local health officials to quarantine individuals or groups of people in very narrow cases where there's an emergency regarding a chemical, biological, radiological agent, or a communicable disease. If you read this with very paranoid eyes, there's a way you can make it seem like it applies to COVID, but it doesn't. This was passed in 2003, but it had been up for discussion recently, but not because the government wanted to make it apply to COVID. In June 2020, the Board of Health passed the Engrossed Substitute House Bill 1551, which was meant to, quote, change stigmatizing language in WAC 246-100 in regards to HIV and AIDS. This was something that HIV advocates had been pushing for since 2014 when Governor Inslee had set a goal of reducing AIDS cases in the state by 50% by 2020. This section, WAC 246-100, is something that has a slot in the agenda at every Board of Health meeting because they, you know, discuss what's going on, updates that need to be made. But that's how this argument gets made, that they're planning to do this now as opposed to back in 2020 when this actual bill was passed.
Right.
This is a real thing, but there's also a fake thing that Stelter brings up that he applies to people like Glenn Beck claiming that there's going to be internment camps for the unvaccinated. There were a couple of viral posts on social media of a headline from a site called Value Walk. Quote, Biden announces Americans not vaccinated before 2022 will be put in camps. This post is satire, and it's labeled as satire. If anyone took the time to read it, they would find some red flags, like this paragraph. Quote, many patriotic Americans living in Texas and Florida have announced they have no plans of going into such camps. One Texan tweeting, yeah, good luck. I have mines around my ranch. Good luck to the feds. Another Floridian tweeted, will there be meth in the camps? If so, it isn't really that bad. Local kids are actually looking forward to these camps as they believe it'll be the closest they'll ever get to getting laid while also not having to get a shot at the same time. I'm not even sure what the joke is.
I really don't like it.
This itself is just a post that they stole from the Stonk Market and then reposted on this Value Walk site, but with a snazzier image. That reposting on Value Walk is screenshot and then shared all over conservative and conspiracy-minded social media, where people can take in the message without reading the clearly absurd article that is labeled satire. A dumb, poorly written joke can thus be passed off as a serious article, and because people don't look into things, they just assume it's real. This relates to our subject because Stelter brings up that claims of internment camps for the unvaccinated trace back in some cases to satire, but I do think that he needed to do a better job of distinguishing that as it relates to the specific example of Washington State and that camp conspiracy, this satirical article is background to the real misrepresentation of the stuff about Washington updating the language in their bill to reduce HIV/AIDS stigma. This leads me to an unfortunate point, and that is that I'm going to have to take Stelter to task a little bit here, but for different reasons than Alex does.
It's because he's ugly.
Oh, no. While he's talking about the Washington State camps conspiracy, he says that a USA Today fact check said that this conspiracy started from a satirical post. That is not true. The USA Today article is about the Value Walk article that I mentioned a minute ago, but it actually has nothing to do with the specific case in Washington, except, like I said, as like pretext or
right.
background. It's
right,
not directly
right, right.
involved. This matters because Stelter's piece is about misinformation and how sloppy mistakes from the media can aid in spreading bullshit. The point of his piece is somewhat undercut by the fact that he himself is making a sloppy mistake here and attributing the Washington conspiracy to this satire article instead of discussing the actual misrepresentation of the Board of Health bill. That mistake, whatever the cause, can be used by people like Alex to claim that he's covering up valid concerns, or at very least undermine the idea that people who are critical of right-wing misinformation know what they're talking about. I wish he'd done better here, but at the same time, Alex is still lying about this segment and creating a straw man version of what Stelter's saying so that he doesn't have to deal with the broader point that Stelter is making, which is actually correct. The broader point is correct.
Right, right.
The sloppiness is just there, which is
right.
unfortunate.
No, I mean, yeah, but it's like, what are you going to do? Journalism's hard, and it's not like they're paying him hundreds of thousands of dollars or something, or he has a giant team available to him or anything along those lines.
I feel like I run into this a bit, like these thoughts, and I don't know what the answer is, but there's a part of me that feels like obviously coverage of this misinformation stuff is important. It needs to be needs to be done, but I wonder if an organization with a paradigm like CNN is actually
the
even
answer
capable
is already
I wonder if those outlets are actually even possible of presenting it in the way that their shows run as it is.
No,
I don't know.
It
seems like it might be possible, but I don't. It's
only possible to the extent that the other factors that they have to kowtow to will allow it to be.
Mm-hmm.
Like, as long as they're a profit-driven network, misinformation is also part of their job. You don't make money by telling people the truth all the time. You know, like, that's just how it works. When you run so many different ads, so many different things, when you're trying to tell all of these different stories all at the same time in such a short amount of time, you're going to lose a lot of shit, and you're going to wind up doing sloppy work.
Right.
It's kind of similar to what we're experiencing here insofar as what you can do is you can say that this is tracked back to a satirical piece USA Today fact checkers say. Mm-hmm. That is a true demonstrable fact. Right?
But it's not.
But it's not.
Uh-huh.
It's a condensation of the way that the entire sequence of events happened. So instead of misinformation maliciously, mm-hmm. they wind up, because of the constraints of their time structure, because of the constraints of money and so on and so on and so forth, doing these little things, and they add up.
They do. And I think that oftentimes it's the result of how news shows are made.
Right.
And maybe there needs to be some changes to that. I don't know exactly what those changes are. But for my purposes, what I'm most interested in is particularly when the subject that's being covered is misinformation and, you know, Stelter's calling out,
right,
like the media entities that right. are like they make a mistake and then it's pounced on.
Right.
Like you can't do that and then make this kind of a mistake.
No.
It's just bullshit.
Well, I mean, they're trapped because the people who have been on the misinformation beat have gotten really good at it over the past 5 to 10 years, and the mainstream networks didn't bother with it. It wasn't really important to them. They were just doing the news. So now they're trying to step into space that has been well trodden by people who are very, very good at it, and they don't want to hire them, and so...
I think most people who, like, I don't know, speaking for myself, I don't want them to hire me.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
So Alex has some clips that he wants to promote that he doesn't have, or at least he doesn't actually play, but he does do some fun impressions.
Oh, with no evidence, Glenn Beck has got this book about the Great Reset. And it's number one, of course, because it's just made up. Thinking you're so dumb, or his listeners are, that they won't go to the Davos Group and hear Klaus Schwab say, we are imploding the economy to end industrial world. Soon you own nothing. Soon you have nothing. Soon microchip on the skin. Let's see what head of Pfizer say. Pfizer talks the same way, like a cartoon character. Yes, you put the chip inside the shot. That way we track them. It's so good.
Wait, Pfizer also talks like
body.
That?
I mean, that's a new clip. I have it. Oh, we run them. We do it. Oh.
I think Alex is doing these impressions because he told himself he can't make fun of Stelter. I think he just needs something.
He's got to hang his hat somewhere.
Yeah, he's so bored with talking about anything that isn't like just childish outbursts. And so he has to do these voices.
Right. He's got to have an outlet.
Yeah. Also, I would love for him to play the clip of the head of Pfizer saying, oh, we put the chip.
Oh, we put the chip into the thing.
That's so good.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's
great. I'm pretty confident that he's making this up. And yeah. I'm also confident that he never plays it on this episode,
yeah,
for sure.
Oh, yeah.
So Alex ends up playing this Stelter clip. Mm. And I did notice that he does not interrupt it, because I think that he is holding himself back from yelling about this.
It's professionalism. I have to be professional now.
So he gets about a minute and a half of the way through.
That's about as good as he can get.
And here's where we're at.
Okay.
So Tucker just sits there and listens respectfully while Glenn implores people to buy his book. And sure enough, the book is number one on Amazon right now because fear does sell. And after the interview, Tucker thanks his guest and calls the book amazing and horrifying. And then he says, just briefly, just gently, that he's heard about this Washington State conspiracy theory, and he hasn't been able to verify it, but...
Back this up 20 seconds. Notice he says he even showed his book, like he showed his penis on air. Oh, Beck showed his book. Ooh, he showed a book. That's like as bad as free speech. Ooh, and oh, fear sells. No, you mean truth sells.
I'm not sure I've ever seen Alex have so much nothing to respond to a clip with. He actually controls himself, like I said, and he doesn't talk over the clip, but then he interrupts with that. I was so confused about what he was even mad about. Like, I don't remember, I watched this and I don't remember Stelter saying anything about showing the book. So I went back and I listened to it again. And at the beginning, he says this.
If you take a step back and think about it, the COVID-19 pandemic is a chance for salesmen to sell fear. Take the unvaccinated Glenn Beck, who's been shilling his new book while sick with COVID.
He said shilling his book.
Yeah.
Alex has so much nothing that he went back to the start of the video to find something to get mad about, and it was a word he misheard.
Oh, my God.
This is pathetic.
Oh, wow.
This is what happens when he can't insult the guy.
Yeah, you've got to say something about his face.
Well, thank
you. What are you gonna tell? He's shilling his book. No.
Thankfully, Alex ends up not being able to control himself.
Good.
And Mr. Potato Head.
There we go. Now we're back.
Sitting up there. Literally acting like this is all made up. I have a stack of articles about the internment camps. It's all over the world. It's happening. It's everywhere. They're putting people in them. And now they want to putting us in the camps, the quote quarantine camps. 12 states have bills. Washington State's already implemented it. They're announcing they're going to deputize anyone they want in the government to, quote, take children away from the unvaccinated. That's in the health department announcements by the state of Washington, Mr. Super Potato Head. And you think people are so stupid they can't go look it up. Here, Brian, let me show you some of these.
I just couldn't do it.
Couldn't do it.
I think it is admirable, the effort that he made, though.
He really did try.
He went pretty deep into it, for him especially.
I mean, he even went all the way so far as to say, showing his book like showing his dick.
Yeah. You can almost feel Alex kicking himself at the beginning of the clip, though, knowing that he'd essentially failed his own self-assigned test.
Oof.
When he calls him Mr. Potato Head, there's that pause. As for the stacks of news Alex has about camps, he's leading with lying about the Washington State story that we've already discussed, so he's going to need to do better than that. The fact that that was his go-to is a pretty strong indication that the stack is probably just printed out memes and tweets. I guess he's going to get into this stacky, though, so let's go ahead and see what we can learn.
It just says Mr. Potato Head 300 times.
Mr. Super Potato Head.
This is nonsense, Stelter Blast, Fox, Glenn Beck for false COVID story. Oh, it's false, huh? Interim occupational consideration for implementation of the shielding approach to prevent COVID-19 infections in humanitarian settings. And this is exactly what is in the legislation and exactly what's been implemented outside of it with an emergency order by the governor in Washington. It's not a conspiracy theory. It's on local news. They're building all these giant facilities, and they built them all over the world.
This is all bullshit.
Yep.
So Alex is making up that part about the Washington bill. That's still just about the updating of the language that we discussed earlier, but he's pretty committed to covering for Tucker's negligence, so he's got to try and make that segment look defensible. As for this other document, I believe that this is what Alex was referring to a couple episodes back when he said that the CDC had documents about wanting to create internment camps for the unvaccinated. And I was like, what the fuck is he talking about?
Yeah, that would make
sense. I think
sense.
It's this.
Okay.
The first words that really jump out to you when you hear the title of this document, though, are humanitarian setting. That should tell you a little bit about the context of this document and how it's about strategies that could be explored to limit the spread of COVID in settings like camps for displaced persons and refugees. Now, the title itself might make you think that this was a document that laid out plans, but it actually didn't. Instead, it discussed the pros and cons of exploring a specific strategy, the shielding approach, and it sought to explore possible challenges that one would have in implementing this.
Sure.
The shielding approach was basically a plan where you would have areas in these places like refugee camps that would be isolated from the larger camp, and what you would do is you'd put people who are at higher risk of developing serious COVID cases there as a way of shielding them.
Mm-hmm.
And this could be done on various scales. It could be done within a household, even if you just had a part of the house. This is what is discussed in the document.
Yeah.
It would be a mistake to assume that this document thinks that it's a great idea to use this strategy also. Quote, in theory, shielding may serve its objective to protect high-risk populations from disease and death. However, implementation of the approach necessitates strict adherence to protocol. Inadvertent introduction of the virus into a green zone may result in rapid transmission among the most vulnerable populations this approach is trying to protect. So this is a very essential problem
with the
strategy that is called out.
Yeah.
If you read the actual entire document, you come away with a sense that the CDC is saying that this approach may work, but there's no empirical evidence that it will, and that the challenges and downsides are pretty real. Take this passage from the summary. Quote, public health not only focuses on the eradication of disease, but addresses the entire spectrum of health and well-being. Populations displaced due to natural disasters or war and conflict are already fragile and have experienced increased mental, physical, and/or emotional trauma. While the shielding approach is not meant to be coercive, it may appear forced or be misunderstood in humanitarian settings. As with many community interventions meant to decrease COVID-19 morbidity and mortality, compliance and behavior change are the primary rate-limiting steps and may be driven by social and emotional factors. These changes are difficult in developed stable settings. Thus, they may be particularly challenging in humanitarian settings, which bring their own set of multifaceted challenges that need to be taken into account.
Okay.
It doesn't seem like they're saying do this.
No.
This isn't about the creation of any camps or taking unvaccinated people to camps. It's about how best to serve folks who are in humanitarian settings already. Jade Folse, the CDC public affairs specialist, told Fact Check that the document itself was only prepared as a response to a paper in the that came out from the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine that argued in favor of the shielding approach. So in response to that, they did an analysis of this.
Sure.
Also, this was primarily an analysis that the CDC did as a resource for other countries who have larger populations of displaced persons in camps where this question was a much higher priority. All the stuff Alex is saying here is bullshit. Like, none of this has any connection to reality. Although the title of the document, if you ignore the what it is...
Everything. Ignore the everything.
Right. And even the title doesn't really work because it has humanitarian settings in it. And, like, I don't know. I guess it sounds scary, though.
Okay. Here's my pitch. All right?
Right.
My pitch is we do set up camps. All right? But we make them so nice. Like, the best.
Like, until, ropes courses.
No, everything.
Zip lines.
The whole thing. The fucking really great water, access like, to all
like,
the food.
But if they have the water, then they have to have that giant inflatable thing where you can lay on the end and your
100%,
friend jumps off something.
And then you go flying? Yeah, absolutely. That's all in there. One roller coaster, maybe two. I don't know. I'm getting ahead of myself on that one.
I might have to. Budgetary restraints.
Could be difficult. But the point is, we make it so nice, eventually everybody in the camps realizes that the real camp is the United States.
Whoa.
Yeah, isn't that deep?
So there's going to be hallucinogens at this camp.
Absolutely.
Okay. So Alex has more in his stacky to get to, because that was a whiff.
FEMA documents describe large-scale rural isolation and quarantine operations, how to recruit obedient Americans to help round up dissenters. This is now coming out in FEMA documents. Look it up.
So I did. Alex is reading this headline from Mike Adams' site, Natural News.
Look it up.
It's written by a guy named Ethan Huff, but I got to think that that's a byline name that multiple people are writing under, because otherwise, holy shit, this guy cranks it out.
Prolific.
Yes. But like 10 a day blog posts.
If that was Ethan Hawke's pen name, perfect.
So this blog post was really just a reposting of something from another blog written by a guy named Steve Rotter. One day, Steve was poking around on the website of the Rural Domestic Preparedness Consortium organization, which is a federal organization that helps train people in rural and tribal communities how to respond in cases of emergencies like natural disasters. This is a great program, in no small part because it helps these communities have autonomy and not rely solely on the more developed resources of neighboring, more urban areas. As they point out, areas with smaller populations will likely not have the tax base that would be required to staff public safety agencies, so the RDPC helps train folks for free to help their communities.
Right.
The RDPC offers constant training opportunities in both in-person contexts when available and on their website in virtual classrooms. Steve was cruising around their website and found a training course available titled MGT-433, Isolation and Quarantine for Rural Communities. He misinterpreted the context of the organization and decided to conclude that this was a new course or that it was somehow related to COVID. But that's not the case. It's important to understand that a lot of the courses that the RDPC offers are facilitated through universities, and the course that Steve is up in arms about is one that's offered by Eastern Kentucky University. And you can find it existing as a course offered in conjunction with the RDPC since years before COVID was even a thing. It's actually slightly unclear to me, but based on their current website, it seems like EKU handles some other courses at this point, and the quarantine class is now done by the Northwest Arkansas Community College, just for the sake of clarity. The syllabus for the course is available on the RDPC website, and it explains some of the class, some of the stuff it does involves things like, quote, legal and ethical considerations of isolation and quarantine,
sure.
As a class might, you know, it's getting into the relevant details.
Yeah.
This becomes important because what Steve has done for his blog post is that he's gone into the course module and selectively taken screenshots that he can use to and make them look sinister.
There you go.
He takes a page that discusses the differences in legal and ethical considerations you have in voluntary versus involuntary quarantine situations to imply that this is about getting people to comply, because they point out that involuntary quarantines are more taxing on resources and much more complicated regarding human rights issues. Where it just dealing with that is a descriptive reality is being represented as like, yeah, we got to coerce people to do this voluntarily. We got to trick them.
Yeah. I mean, it is like the far right has this, I don't know if it's coordinated, but it feels like it is, where they find the most innocuous, just good ideas. Just like, hey, here's what we're going to do. We're going to help people learn how to respond to emergencies. Nothing beyond that. There's no nefarious element to this at all. Uh-huh. And then they go and find like something that they can turn nefarious.
Yeah.
Like it's just this is just benign.
But it's because it has utility for the larger arguments that they want to make.
Totally. And it's a good strategy. Working.
If you thought that was bad, worse is his handling of a slide about how responders need to respect people's privacy. He acts like it's somehow about being sneaky, but it's clear from the slide that it's discussing concern about how stigmatizing illnesses or potential illnesses can be inside a community. So you shouldn't advertise to the neighborhood that someone might be sick. That's what the slide is about.
No, I thought you were supposed to get pitchforks, torches. Nope.
Steve's post is written in such a way that it could be a perfect jump-off point for a shitty blog like Natural News to twist the story even further. From their post regarding the need for privacy, quote, as the emergency responders haul their victims off to camps, the RDPC encourages them to be as discreet as possible in order to keep the ordeal as much under wraps as possible. You see how this goes.
I mean, wild.
So the RDPC training course is something that has been offered for years and was never noticed until it became useful to push a COVID conspiracy. And you can see the consistent pattern in bullshit dissemination on full display. The training course is benign and a helpful resource that's provided to rural and tribal communities. Steve writes a horrible blog post misrepresenting it, which then is in turn is picked up and further sensationalized by Natural News. Alex then reports on the headline that Natural News put on the article and makes up a story about what he wants it to mean. This pipeline is very consistent. Alex can pretend to have the deep sources that he has all he wants, but really he just has stacks of printed out pages of bullshit blog posts that don't have anything to do with the reality of what underlies the bullshit that he's talking about. It's just, I grow frustrated with this clearly traceable path.
Yeah. What a fun way to view the world, that the government is coming to take people away when they're sick. And to be kind, they have a training module that makes sure they know to keep it quiet, right? So you don't mess up with anybody's privacy.
Well, I mean,
that's really nice of them.
But that's just, that's a cover-up thing.
What kind of insane person would look at a fucking slide and be like, well, obviously they're training people to keep it quiet when they abduct them?
A very insane person.
That would be crazy.
So Alex has another piece in his stacky. Two strikes so far.
Okay.
But here's the worst part. It's a town hall article linked to Rasmussen. National poll, 48% of Democrats want to put anyone that hasn't had the shot in a camp. 30%, let me show you, want to take people's children that haven't had it. I mean, go read it for yourself. I covered this for an hour last night on the Sunday show.
So Alex has two strikes from the last two clips. And I got to say, he saves himself from striking out by getting a ball on this one. It's not good, but it's
all
not,
right.
It's not
all
a strike.
Right. So we're 1-2.
I'm going to skip that town hall post to just go straight to the Rasmussen data on this one. So there's a headline from January 13th on Rasmussen. Quote, COVID-19, Democratic voters support harsh measures against unvaccinated. I got to say that I don't think it means as much as Alex wants it to, but he's not too far off. There's an important distinction to make about what he's reporting, though, and what the actual survey says. He's saying that 48% of Democratic voters want to put anyone who doesn't get a vaccine in a camp, but here's what the report actually says. Quote, nearly half, 48%, of Democratic voters think federal and state governments should be able to fine or imprison individuals who publicly question the efficacy of existing COVID-19 vaccines on social media, television, radio, or in online or digital publications. That's not for unvaccinated people. It's for people who spread misinformation. And also, this is a bullshit question based on the way that it's worded.
Oh, yeah.
All you can tell from the result is that 48% support possible fines or imprisonment. But that's too broad of a question to mean anything. If all of these people actually just supported a fine, the result could erroneously give the impression that they wanted to imprison people, which wouldn't be reflective of their actual position. This is a pretty elementary statistical information gathering fuck up, and this question should never have been worded like this, and it kind of taints the results of this report.
The question is, do you think people who lie should get consequences?
Right. Like, but there's a massive difference in believing that people who lie about public health measures should be fined or they should go to prison.
Sure.
There's
I'm saying that as a question, that's my point.
Right.
Is that your question is so overbroad that 48% means fucking nothing.
Right.
I too agree that people who maliciously lie to get people killed
should get a fine
should
or
get in some way punished for it. I get it.
There should be a mechanism for a consequence.
Yes.
So that said, the survey also found, quote, 45% of Democrats would favor governments requiring citizens to temporarily live in designated facilities or locations if they refuse to get a COVID-19 vaccine. So in some ways, Alex isn't totally lying about the spirit of what the survey says.
Sure.
He just can't keep the details or the numbers straight.
Right.
Another interesting point is that if you look at the more detailed breakdown, only 22% of Democrats strongly support this idea, while 33% strongly oppose it. Overall, it seems to me like there's greater opposition than support for this, even among Democrats.
Sure.
As for the kids thing, quote, 29% of Democratic voters would support temporarily removing parents' custody of their children if parents refuse to take the COVID-19 vaccine. I'm not really sure that I agree with those 29% of Democrats, and also, if you look at it the other way, that means 71% are not in support of such a plan. So take your pick on how you want to look at it.
Sure.
Also, this isn't a question that's asking people about actual proposals. This is a hypothetical question.
Yeah.
Overall, though, through the course of my time doing this show, I've come to be a bit skeptical of results that I see from Rasmussen. But I do have to give it up to Alex that he's somewhat fairly reporting the results of this poll. I'm not sure that the results of the poll mean anything, nor do I think it helps his argument that the government is making camps to lock up the unvaccinated. In terms of it being one of the three pieces of evidence he's provided to defend Glenn Beck and Tucker's ridiculous segment from Stelter's criticism,
yeah.
I don't even see how it's relevant.
I mean, and even then, that question is so fucking stupid. Do you support? What do you mean? What does that even mean? Do you support taking somebody's kids away if they refuse to get vaccinated? If they test positive, get them to a hotel. That's the same fucking thing. You're not taking their kids away. Like, what they're trying to say, and it's such a fucking stupid question.
Right, right. I think there are different ways that you could understand the question.
Totally.
I still think that...
I think it's a bad idea.
I think that I would be with that 71% that is probably like...
Totally.
I think that that causes more problems than it might
It's not
alleviate.
A good solution.
Probably not.
No.
So Alex has another piece. Let's see if he strikes out. Casey is at the bat, as it were.
Oh, and here's another one. Utah's largest newspaper calls for unvaxxed to endure draconian lockdowns enforced by the National Guard. Go read it for yourself.
Ooh, Casey is struck out.
Mm.
This is an editorial. The paper isn't calling for anything. This editorial isn't even calling for what Alex claims. From the article, quote, were Utah a truly civilized place, the governor's next move would be to find a way to mandate the kind of mass vaccination campaign we should have launched a year ago, going as far as to deploy the National Guard to ensure the people without proof of vaccination would not be allowed, well, anywhere. It may be too late for that politically and medically. I've noticed that the right-wing and right-wing media figures like Alex in particular really have a convenient and, I suspect, intentional inability to understand the difference between an editorial and a piece of news or an official statement. Because he plays fast and loose with the distinction between those things, Alex can report an op-ed as if it was a demand being made by a newspaper, which in turn allows his audience to leap to unjustified conclusions. I suspect he does that on purpose because it's really easy. Any day of the week, you can scan through enough papers. If you do, you'll find something in an editorial to get mad about. And to add to the laziness, you can tell that based on the headline that Alex reads, he's not actually talking about the real editorial. He's covering a Zero Hedge article that's mad about the editorial for him.
Jesus.
It's just bullshit.
Ugh.
It's meaningless. Anyway, he struck out.
Yeah.
But that doesn't stop him from claiming victory.
So CNN's got articles about, oh, look at Europe, they're getting smart. Look at Australia, lock everybody up. This is what we need here. And meanwhile, Stelter's on TV going, I'll tell you, Tucker Carlson and Glenn Beck, they're up there just making lies. And look, they're number one. Tucker's number one on TV. Glenn Beck's got the number one book. Oh, it's crazy. We tried to shut down Alex Jones, and it's like we cut a starfish in pieces, and it just grew more starfish. That's right, you little sack of filth. You lying little piece of garbage.
It's quite an impression.
Yeah.
I think Alex has failed to make his point, and he's also failed to...
Hi, Brian Stelter.
I don't know if this is true, but I heard a rumor that Brian Stelter is in the new Kingdom Hearts game.
I think I've heard that, too. Yeah. Hi, Cloud Strife, you've got to go solve some problems.
Alex has failed across the board. Mm-hmm. Is dealing with the actual points mm-hmm. failure... is deciding not to attack Stelter
sure.
also failed.
Yeah.
This is really sad, too. Like, he's provided these specific citations that we've discussed here, and I guess he thinks that's enough that he can declare victory, but it isn't at all. Stelter's central question was about the Washington camp conspiracy, and Alex didn't demonstrate in any way that it was a real thing or that Stelter was wrong. He just flung around a bunch of headlines that he pulled from dishonest blogs to create the impression that camps were being made in some vague place somewhere, or maybe the Democrats supported them, but point is, he didn't even address the actual point in Stelter's video. But the point is that even when he's acting like he's trying, Alex's arguments are meaningless and impotent.
Yeah.
Nonsense. Stupid.
Yeah. In the baseball metaphor, it would be like if journeyman second baseman struck out and then just started running to first base and celebrating and then threw his bat into the crowd and ran to second base and was screaming and everybody was like, oh, my God. And then he got home and he declared a home run.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how the rules of baseball work.
It does in the information war.
Yep. That is exactly how it works.
So here's how Alex ends the segment.
Yeah, there it is. Bill, Washington Bill, will authorize a strike force to send unvaccinated to internment camps. It's not a rumor, Stelter. I need your support. I need you to take these videos, these articles, and share them. All I got you, all you got's me. We're in a war together, and we are the black sheep. We're the tip of the spear, my God. And we're doing our most important work ever. So go to InfoWarsStore.com while you still can before they SWAT team me and lock me in a gulag and help support us.
Woof. So he does end up talking about the Washington thing almost as an afterthought. And this is just a Gateway Pundit article about the same Washington language update that we were talking about earlier. The crack team of sleuths found this wording in the WAC 246-100-040. Quote, a local health officer may invoke the powers of police officers, sheriffs, constables, and other officers and employees of any political subdivisions within the jurisdiction of the health department to enforce immediately orders given to effectuate the purposes of this section in accordance with the provisions of blah, 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 other sections.
Sure.
And so they found this language and they assumed that it was something new or a new bill. That is not the case. It's been part of the statute since it passed in 2003. The whole thing is about the revisions that were made to remove stigmatizing language, and it's not recent either. Like I said, that substitute House Bill 1551 passed in June 2020. This Gateway Pundit article is straight up stupid, too. It ends with this ominous line. Quote, WAC 246-100-040 was certified on October 25th, 2019, months prior to the coronavirus outbreak in the United States.
That's suspicious.
The first confirmed case of COVID in the U.S. was diagnosed in Seattle on January 20th, 2020.
Wrong. Florida, Steve Pachanik.
We all know that.
We all know that.
The implication is supposed to obviously be that they passed this law where health officials get to be like cops just before the first cases of COVID were diagnosed because they knew that COVID was coming, and then that the health people get to act like cops and put Alex and his friends into FEMA camps. This is just really bad work for a few reasons. The first is that the language about health officials taking on police responsibilities was introduced in 2003. You see, the larger set of permanent rules of the Board of Health predate that, but in 2003, a large-scale revamp of the document was passed, and this was part of one of the sections that was amended. The second reason that this is stupid is because the claim that this rule was certified on October 25th, 2019 is just based on the fact that at the bottom of the page that on the website of the Washington State Legislature where they've posted this rule, it says, quote, certified on October 25th, 2019. But that doesn't mean that it was passed or even amended that day. If you go and look up other documents from the Washington State Legislature, you'll find that literally all of them include certified on October 25th, 2019 at the bottom. It's really hard for me to tell precisely what the deal is here because I don't work for the Washington Legislature, but if I had to guess, in October 2019, they went through a process of updating all the files that are posted online, and the certification date reflects that. Like, they added a new online portal
that
or changed how documents are accessible.
Yeah.
And so in order to do that, you have these listings of the existing statutes, and they are certified right. by the statute law committee
right.
of the Washington Legislature.
Right.
The idea that the date involves anything related to when these statutes went on the book is dumb. Unless you think the state of Washington established their Department of Commerce in October 2019. There's this unfortunate dynamic that's at play here, and that is that if you're a reporter at the Gateway Pundit, even the smallest amount of digging would puncture gigantic holes in your story. The goal is to arrive at a predetermined conclusion, then provide headlines for someone like Alex or your parents on Facebook to get mad about and spread to others, hoping to anger them, which in turn drives traffic to your site and boosts ad revenue. The best way to do that is to be lazy, to not do any of that digging that would end up causing your story to fall apart. If you see, quote, certified on October 25th, 2019 on that page, your work is done because your assumption fits the narrative. But if you explore it more, reality might not. And you don't want to deal with that.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, my point is that Alex hasn't proven that Stelter was wrong. And ultimately, after all of this, I think he hasn't demonstrated that anything he's talking about is more than a rumor or a dumb conspiracy blog headline.
Yeah, it is a little bit like Gateway Pundit and the like, all are like digging for oil, right? Mm-hmm. And it, whatever pops out of the ground, they're like, stop digging, we've hit oil. And all they do is hit sewer pipes.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's about
a,
right.
That is a fine metaphor for this shit work that's being done.
Yep.
So we get off the Stelter tip. That's basically his... I do think he managed to insult him less, but he still didn't stick to his guns.
Well, it's very nice of you, Alex, to insult me slightly less than you normally do.
So Stelter business, check.
Okay.
Now... it's Raji time.
Okay.
So Roger Stone is now battling COVID, but he was on fire yesterday when I talked to him yesterday afternoon.
He had a fever.
I begged him to come on today, and I appreciate him coming on. He has some big, big announcements, and I got to say, just for survival, I've got to join him because I let him call me a Russian agent. I got spit on and coffee thrown on me and tea and stuff, and my kids attacked at school. She called me a Russian agent. Because that was bad enough. But now these publications are saying the same thing, that, oh, Jones is definitely involved. Jones is running it. So I have a team of three lawyers here, separate ones from my other cases we've got here. They're drawing up the lawsuits right now as well. We learned Roger is simultaneously, because we got to get him into court and show people you're not going to just sit up here and say that I wanted to go burn up or blow up the Capitol and go to a supermax prison and destroy the country. Why the hell would I want to do that? We had peaceful rallies all over the country and in D.C. Our event got hijacked. I'm pissed. I want to find out who was involved.
I have a lead. Oh, boy.
I know a whole crack team of people who are involved.
Yeah, he's a friend of yours. The lead. So anyway, Roger, he's decided that it's time. He's going on the attack.
But Roger Stone joins us to talk about who he is going after here today. Roger Stone, thank you so much for joining us.
Alex, first of all, it's great to be here. And I guess right off the bat, I want to thank the thousands of people around the country who have been praying for my recovery in what turned out to be a much more difficult struggle with COVID-19 than I had expected. It is only by following a strict regimen of ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine a vitamin regimen including vitamin C, D, Quercetin, zinc particularly, and others, and for the help of some truly, truly gutsy, courageous doctors, that I can finally tell you that I am back to work and feeling normal again.
So this doesn't quite match the way that Alex was describing his case right earlier in the episode. But like I said, I think as we go through this, we're going to hear him talking a lot more slurry than usual. And I don't know. On the one hand, he could be drunk. But on the other hand, it could be a neurological side effect. He could have had like a mild stroke.
It wouldn't surprise me. That is a regular thing.
And I don't want to make fun of that. I want to be as respectful as possible.
Sure.
While still making fun of Roger because he's a fucking asshole.
He's a fucking piece of shit.
It's a tough line to walk, and I hope we'll be able to stay on the right side of it.
Yeah.
So, Roger, this is the thing that went around Twitter.
This is truly horrific. And I had all of the worst symptoms, the fevers, the sweats, the cough, the congestion, the body aches, the mental fog. Tony Fauci and his red Chinese comrades do a superb job in the formulation of this bioweapon.
Something just doesn't feel right. Like that doesn't, like, I know that those things can be bad side effects, but that's kind of like the generic list of side effects. I don't, there's just something weird about this.
Yeah, this is off.
Yeah. I think it's probably just because it's Roger. I think it's because we're trained to be suspicious of everything he does.
Yeah, I mean, you're just waiting for, if he was laying down bleeding from the skull, I would walk up to him and I'd be expecting him to have a knife ready to stab me if I went and asked him if he was okay.
That's jelly.
Yeah, exactly. It'd be like immediate, like, listen, man, I'm sorry. You earned this. This isn't me reacting in an inhumane way.
Yeah, your behavior throughout your life leads me to believe that that's marinara.
Exactly. Yeah.
Anyway, look, he took the hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin, and that saved him, and that has made him really respect Joe Rogan.
Sure.
For I think he's angling for a booking.
Yeah.
So you're saying, you know, I mean, obviously we talked about with doctors kind of this formula of success. Rogan expanded it and helped get it out to billions of people, and that's helped save a lot of lives. Absolutely. And he knew they'd come after him, but he did it. I told people a year and a half ago, Joe is awake, he's going to come after him, and I told you folks, and he did it.
Look, I don't know that all of his politics agree with all of mine, but on this issue, as well, of course, as on the issue of cannabis legalization, I totally agree with him. What he did was very courageous. He knew they'd go after him. He knew they'd try to shut him down. But he did what was right. I honestly think this man saved thousands and thousands and thousands of lives.
I think a little more than that. I think this show saved hundreds of thousands or millions. He probably saved tens of millions.
Whoa. Whoa. Whoa, 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 whoa.
Wow. Wow.
That's depressing.
Being fundamentally, not entirely, but fundamentally at fault for the millions of people who have died, and then saying that we've saved hundreds of thousands of lives is a real tough pill for me to swallow.
It sucks to hear.
Yeah, it really fucks with my head. Really makes me mad.
Yeah.
Not good.
So, Roger, in addition to declaring his victory over COVID, is on for another reason, and that is to let people know he's about to sue everybody.
Great.
There are irresponsible elements in the fake news media who are recycling this notion that I had either advance notice or some involvement in the illegal acts of January 6th. I spoke at two legally permitted events on January 6th. I did have a voluntary security detail from the Oath Keepers, as did all of the other speakers at that conference. They were courtesy of those running the legally permitted events. The fact that I came in contact with these individuals proves nothing. The claim by, let us take one right off the top, Bill Palmer at the Palmer Report. Mr. Palmer is going to be sued for $10 million defamation in the California courts.
So I think it's actually more suspicious that the bodyguard was volunteer and that everyone who is high profile had an Oath Keeper with them.
That doesn't say what I thought he thinks it said.
It feels a little more suspicious.
And he was like, oh, see, everybody had one. That's fine, right?
Everyone had somebody connected to the central hub.
See, what's going on is everyone was involved with the conspiracy to wait. No, that's not what I meant.
No, I mean, I don't know what he hopes to achieve with that bit of information, but also the bodyguard he had wasn't just any Oath Keeper. Like we said on the last episode, it was Mike Whip Simmons, Stewart's operations leader.
Yeah.
That may not prove any real guilt on Roger's part, but it does explain why people have questions for him that they want answered. Also, again, Whip hasn't been indicted or named in any of the indictments yet, which probably isn't a great sign for these guys. Smart move, though, to shift the narrative towards suing people for saying things you don't like, because these guys are free speech warriors.
Yeah.
They love free speech so much, they're going to sue media figures.
You know, I think that's fascinating. I would like for Roger to sue me for defamation.
Well,
I
have to separate myself from you because I don't want the headache.
No, I understand that. I don't endorse
anything that Jordan may be about to say.
But I really feel like it's not possible. Like, cause it's about defaming one's character and the damages from therein defamation.
Well, I also
think, and I don't think that's possible with Roger.
You could make that argument. I don't know if that would hold up in court, but you could also make the argument that Roger's a public figure.
Sure, absolutely.
So the standards for defamation are
insanely high. But again, even I just don't think it's possible. I think he's
Roger
globally
said horrible things about himself.
Globally, and he's a rat fucker.
Well, and he's talked constantly about how he plays up that image of him as a villain or whatever, which would tend to, I don't know. I think defaming Roger would be hard.
I think it would be real tough.
I think I don't know if anybody has up till this point, but Bill Palmer apparently better get his
good
fucking
luck
fucking checkbook ready.
Good luck.
See you in court, Bill. Bring your checkbook. In your case, I have so many counts of defamation, the number will probably end up being much larger because you haven't been cautious. you haven't speculated that Roger Stone's a Russian spy, which, of course, also would make it not true. But as senior FBI officials confirm to the Reuters news service, the FBI found no evidence whatsoever that Roger Stone or Alex Jones was involved in a conspiracy to commit any illegal act on January 6th. So, Mr. Palmer, it's your turn. Produce your proof to the contrary. Produce your witnesses to the contrary. There are none. You're going to be writing a huge check, Mr. Palmer. I, for one, can't wait.
I don't think that Roger understands that he's a public figure. And in order to make this case fly, he's going to need to establish actual malice on Bill Palmer's part, which I don't think he can do. It just seems to me like what's going on here is that, like, Roger wants to get that old manly blood pumping again.
Oh, yeah.
He's been out of the threatening people game for a while, so now I think he's getting a little overzealous in making a comeback. You know, he had to be a little bit more, like, cautious when he was waiting for the...
For the pardon.
Exactly.
Then, yeah, he had to lay low for a while.
And then afterwards, he had to have that whole penitent, I've found God thing.
Right.
And now he can go back to being a real shithead.
Real piece of shit.
Who threatens people.
Yeah,
and,
it's about time.
Yeah.
We've all just been waiting for it.
So it's kind of fun.
So let me put any journalist who wants to go step up right on notice.
Me.
If you accuse me of being involved in any illegal activity on January 1st, 6th in Washington, D.C., you will be met with a lawsuit. If in the past you have accused me of being a Russian traitor, you will also be faced with a lawsuit. So lawyer up, liberals. I'm not turning the other cheek.
Glad to see that that reform.
I've learned from my faith
right.
to take the things that Jesus himself directly said and say, I won't do those.
My faith.
I follow the Lord.
My faith, because I was saved with that pardon, it made me find God in the most sincere way. I will not turn the other cheek. I will sue you, you fuck.
What I've found is most important about faith is when it conflicts with what you want to do, your faith actually says it's okay for you to do that.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's how it works.
The gospel according to Roger.
True strength is when you need something, believing in faith, and then when you don't need it, throwing it away.
Yeah. So Alex kind of is a little bit self-conscious, I think. He's aware that the audience might be like, guys, you're talking about this shit all the time. It's getting a little boring.
For a lot of our listeners, they say, Alex, we know you guys didn't attack the Capitol. We know we're tired of it. But the Democrats are running on January 6th and saying all their opposition are terrorists and literally trying to say we're kingpin mastermind terrorists. People need to know that this is a serious issue. And Tucker Carlson gets it. So many other people get this now, Tulsi Gabbard's, that this is a big issue. Even Mitch McConnell says they're trying to brand the Republican Party as terrorist and run on that. So this is a big, big problem. We need to stand up to this.
You're absolutely right.
Tulsi Gabbard's and Mitch McConnell.
Hey, when you got the two of them together, that's the most bipartisan thing I've ever heard.
Yeah. So this doesn't actually feel to me like what super innocent people do. This strikes me as a weird move to threaten massive lawsuits against journalists who say things that you don't like, because from where I'm sitting, it just looks like an attempted intimidation. Roger's suits aren't going to go anywhere, and somebody writing an article about Roger possibly being in trouble, that has no actual bearing on whether or not he's actually going to get in trouble. There's no real-world consequence to, I don't know. This just feels like a performance geared at centering Roger and Alex as the victims in the whole thing, and it hopefully makes people afraid to put pieces together as it results to as it relates to connections
right.
between people who are at the Capitol on the 6th.
Right.
Just trying to sort of chill people's desire to cover these stories.
Yeah, and it's
for fear that Roger is going to sue them.
Yeah, and it's that false confidence, you know, like whenever Stewart came on, knowing what we know now, when he came on and just started lying through his teeth about how they were all fucking giving medical aid and shit like that, you
yeah.
know? Like, that's where we're at. Like, hey, how dare you say that I had anything to do with the 6th? I'll sue you. Cut to 6 months from
well,
now.
Well, I mean, you know? Stewart was even threatening to sue Pete Santilli.
Exactly.
But it was about him being called the Fed. But it still has the same sort of effect.
Yeah.
Like, it's shifting the discussion into, like, you going on the attack and,
yep.
and what have you. And it's, I don't know. It just doesn't feel sincere.
It's not.
No. So this struck me as a little weird.
Well, I talked to Roger about a week ago, and he could barely talk. And he said, man, I really hope I make it. I've never been this sick. I said, I know. I got Delta. That's probably what he got. There's Delta and Omicron going around. And it felt like a gorilla was on my chest for 2 weeks. Almost killed my dad. My dad has bounced back 90%, but mentally he's still not where he was. So we're just glad Roger didn't die. This is a very serious bioweapon. They scanned it 2 years ago, and they knew it was a bioweapon. Fauci made it. That's all come out in court. That's a whole other subject. I want to hit a little bit in the next segment.
Wait. Fauci made it, and that's come out in court?
Yeah, court.
Okay.
The court of heaven.
The court of public opinion, specifically on Alex's show.
That would be most likely the court.
I like that clip a lot because Alex is talking about how he got COVID and it was like a gorilla was on his chest. But the way he's saying it, he says, I felt like I had a gorilla on my chest for 2 weeks, almost killed my dad.
Yeah.
It makes it sound like he's saying that he almost killed his dad.
Or the gorilla on his chest almost killed his
exactly.
dad.
Exactly. There's a ton of interpretations based on loose speaking that are fun.
Yeah. Yeah. That is nice.
Anyway, I would like to see this court case.
I would like to see a gorilla on Alex's chest.
So I don't know if you know, like, this is Martin Luther King Day. Martin Luther King Jr. Day.
Yeah. So I'm sure we're going to quote him.
No, not so much, good. But Roger's going to tell a little story.
Oh, no.
Here, by the way, is a little historical fact that I think your listeners might need to know. Today is Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday. What people don't know that upon the murder of King, every politician aspiring to be president headed to Atlanta to get a photo op with Coretta King, Teddy Kennedy, Senator Eugene McCarthy, Bobby Kennedy, Dick Clark, Frank Church, and others. One man asked to see Coretta King privately. That was former President Richard Nixon. He flew to Atlanta and got a private audience with Coretta King.
I'm sorry, I killed her.
He gave her an envelope with a check that paid for the entire college educations of all of her remaining children. He also did not want that information publicly released. Richard Milhouse Nixon.
So Rogers actually even says, like, on this day when we remember Martin Luther King, we should also remember what great things Nixon did, like this, giving them a check. So this seemed like a weird list at first when he's talking about those politicians, because he says Dick Clark, but he's not talking about the entertainer.
No, I got there in my head, but immediately I was like, ooh, is the ball dropping?
There was a politician who was elected to the Senate in 1972, and before that he was an assistant to John Culver, a U.S. representative from Iowa named Dick Clark. So the story that Roger is telling is one that was passed on by a King family friend named Zernona Clayton. But other folks are not so convinced that this actually happened. For one, there's no evidence of this check, and if it did exist, it was never cashed. Secondly, Nixon aide Dwight Chapin told the Daily Beast, quote, "It's like I'm 100% certain he would never give her an envelope. There's too much open to interpretation and wrong interpretation to do that." If you think about it, though it would be a very nice gesture from human to human, when it's Nixon and MLK's widow, the dynamics are a little murky. Another thing that's important to point out is that according to other Nixon aides, this meeting with King was not really something that Nixon wanted to stay secret. Quote, "Nixon's visit with Miss King was off the record, but that evening in Key Biscayne, Nixon wanted to know how it was playing. Chapin reminded him that it was off the record. Nixon had expected news of the meeting would leak and was furious when told it had not. So Nick Rue, another Nixon aide, called Atlanta radio stations to tip them off that Nixon had been seen at the King home, but when reporters called the house, no one would confirm the visit." According to these aides, going to visit Miss King was a way for Nixon to get out of having to go to the funeral, because he didn't want to.
Great.
And it didn't work. He still had to go to the funeral.
There we go.
I don't know what the reality is here, but I kind of think that the point about Nixon not giving King an envelope because it would be widely open to interpretation, that makes more sense with the other facts of reality I factor in. I'm not sure. You know, I don't know. It's possible that he gave her something. But another point that I saw brought up that was interesting was that Nixon was friends with Martin Luther King Sr.
Mm-hmm.
The two of them were on friendly terms. And so I think it was Chapin was suggesting that, like, I could see a possibility where he asked Martin Luther King's father if the kids were taken care of.
Sure.
If there was a college fund for them.
Sure.
That kind of an exchange I could see happening. But the idea of giving this envelope seems like something he never would do.
Yeah, you know, I mean, this is a good tidbit. I'm going to throw this out there. Doesn't change my opinion of Nixon.
Sure.
Does not affect it even a little bit.
Mm. Well, look, I'm just saying, from Roger's perspective,
right.
whenever you remember Martin Luther King, you must remember Nixon.
It is Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday and also the anniversary of Richard Nixon showing that he is just as good of a person as Martin Luther King Jr.
According to Roger, maybe better.
That is, that's exactly the case.
He has a tattoo of Nixon on his back, not Martin Luther King.
No shit.
Yeah. So anyway, Alex has some thoughts about the I Have a Dream speech.
We can, for TV viewers, amazing footage from that famous I Have a Dream speech. It wasn't terrorism when he got hundreds of thousands of people or more to march there for Voting Rights Act and for civil rights. And it wasn't terror when we wanted to have the investigation of what was really happening with the election, as Democrats had asked for 4 years before, that's in the Constitution.
Oh, man, I guess there must be some kind of real important difference between what happened during the 1963 Civil Rights March and what happened on January 6th.
I wonder if there was a difference.
I might be grasping at straws here, but in 1963, no one stormed the Capitol.
No one?
No one.
That Not even a few?
That seems like a really important difference that Alex is just ignoring. If Trump and all of his followers had just hung out outside the Capitol in the areas they had permits for and waved signs and chanted, we'd probably not even remember the date January 6th at this point. It would just be another impotent protest fueled by misinformation. Alex wants to pretend that the man wants to arrest everyone who was there, but that's not true. That's his false straw man that he's created. The people who are being arrested are people who committed crimes. Also, if Alex thinks that no one criticized the March on Washington for jobs and freedom,
oh boy,
he should look into his own history and see what the John Birch Society was saying about it. There's a book called The World of the John Birch Society, and they discuss the response to the march. Quote, "The John Birch Society's response to these developments was both to considerably increase the amount of time and attention it devoted to the question of black civil rights and to frame the issue within the organization's broader conspiratorial understanding of communism's determination to take over the United States." The progenitors of Alex's entire worldview were, at the time of the I Have a Dream speech that Alex professes to love so much, attacking King as part of a secret communist plot to overthrow the United States, which by extension would mean that the March on Washington was secretly a communist march attempting to overthrow the United States.
Yeah, there would be that.
It's fun for Alex to pretend that everyone supported King in 1963, but the reality is that if he'd been around back then, at least half of his show would be him reading bullshit headlines about how King was working for the communist Chinese.
Yep.
To destabilize America. It's all just nonsense. He can't even possibly project himself back to that time and realize what a dick he would have been.
Unreal.
Yep.
Ugh.
And still is.
Yep.
Now, Roger, I think this is unfortunate. This is dumb of him.
Those who say question the election results is treason
need
to look at their own actions when they got beat by George W. Bush. Everything they're accusing us of is exactly what they did.
Let's talk about getting beat.
Well,
real quick.
There isn't a problem with questioning election results, particularly very close election results. If that was all that folks like Alex and Trump were doing, then we wouldn't be in the situation we're in now. They didn't question anything. They said definitively that the election was stolen and that Trump won, which is a crime against all Americans, and people needed to stand up against the steal and the cover-up of it. Even Roger's stupid ass was saying on InfoWars that North Korean boats full of ballots were arriving in Maine to steal the election.
He did say that.
It's bullshit to compare this at all to the response to the 2000 election, when the Supreme Court essentially decided the election and then Gore gracefully conceded. Also, Roger should probably pump the damn brakes here, considering his involvement in the 2000 election and how he essentially facilitated a false flag to get counting of votes stopped in Florida, and how that has mysterious parallels to the January 6th thing, and he probably would threaten to sue me for bringing this up, but it's important. For those who weren't around back then, the 2000 election hung in the balance depending on who won Florida, where the results were ridiculously close. A recount had been underway, and then, on November 22, 2000, Republican protesters showed up at the Miami-Dade County Canvassing Board's recount location and intimidated the officials there with loud accusations that they were stealing people's ballots and also physical actions. Joe Geller was then the Democratic Party chairman for the county, and he was on hand that day. Quote, "This one guy was tripping me and pushing me and kicking me," recalled Geller, who is now a state legislator. "At one point, I thought if they knocked me over, I could have literally got stomped to death." The Miami-Dade recount ended that day, and eventually Bush was certified as the winner by 537 votes on November 28th, with this recount, as well as the one in Palm Beach County, never actually being finished. This went back and forth in the courts, and we all know how it ended.
It went great!
In 2008, Roger Stone told The New Yorker that he had essentially been running the operation, which sent in these protesters, who were actually just GOP staffers, into the recount locations to get it shut down. Quote, I set up my command center there. I had walkie-talkies and cell phones, and I was in touch with our people in the building. Our whole idea was to shut the recount down, and that's why we were there. Another GOP strategist, Brad Blakeman, also takes credit for running the event, but Stone insists it was him who was responsible for causing a staged uprising that was intended to disrupt the carrying out of the election for the purposes of installing his preferred candidate, George W. Bush. If I were Roger, I would simply not bring up the 2000 election, since doing so has the potential to remind people that he was deeply involved in an event that's weirdly similar to the events of the 6th back in 2000. Kind of should shut up about that, Roger.
Yeah, but I mean, that's serial killer shit. They always show up and they all want to be smarter than the cops. They all want to. I've watched true crime shit before. Psychopaths show up and they're like, you'll never catch me. And they like to drop hints that they did it.
Yeah,
they want to be given credit for it, but they don't want consequences for it.
I'm not saying that Roger orchestrated anything on the 6th. I'm just saying that his actions in 2000...
No, that's what I'm saying.
Could be part of a pattern.
Yeah. No, he's bragging.
Yeah.
Every time he brings up the 2000 election as something that went well, he's bragging about how he made it happen.
So we get to talking to some other issues with Roger, because it can't all be lawsuits and Martin Luther King.
No.
He also wants to talk about, Trump. What's going on with Trump?
Sure.
So I was talking to Roger yesterday, who really likes the president, respects him. But people behind the scenes say, yeah, I wish he'd do better here or there. I've really never heard Roger so upset as he was with Trump yesterday. And I said, well, you talk about this on air? And he said, well, yeah, I'll talk about most of it. But we're really just worried about Trump. And let's just say this. He's not aging well. And I don't mean physically. I mean, he's not going in a good direction.
Oh, no. Is someone poisoning his Diet Cokes again?
I guess.
Yeah.
Now he's too feeble in the mind, and yeah.
So Roger's main point is that he takes issue with endorsements that Trump is making. He's not endorsing the right candidates. And some of his critiques come off a little racist.
What perplexes me are some of his endorsements. He endorsed Congress Mario Diaz-Balart of Miami. Donald Trump wouldn't know Mario Diaz-Balart from the Frito Bandito.
I don't think he'd say that if it wasn't a Hispanic person.
Oh, boy.
That said, Trump endorsed Diaz-Balart because he was one of the members of the House of Representatives that joined in on the lawsuit Texas versus Pennsylvania, which was about trying to undermine 2020 election results.
Yeah.
It seems like Trump is going to be willing to endorse anyone who subscribes to the idea that he actually won the election.
This guy
is in that club.
It's how the mob works.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's a couple other people that he takes issue with, but then it gets to another Hispanic person, and boy, oof.
Let's take Ana Paulina Luna. There is no such person. Ana Paulina Luna is not Hispanic. She ran for Congress using a picture of her with an assault weapon wearing military fatigues. And she said, quote, until you have spilled blood for this country, you can't understand the fight for freedom. Ana Paulina Luna never served in combat, and her stint in the Air Force was not 16 years. It was 6 months.
So she should replace Senator Blumenthal's Senate seat.
Yeah, I know. She would be perfect with Luna.
I have no idea what Roger's going on about. This conversation makes no sense. He's attacking Luna as a bad candidate, and then Alex says that she'd be good to replace Senator Blumenthal, and Roger says, yes? This is so convoluted because Luna is running for the GOP primary to represent Florida's 13th district in the House of Representatives. Meanwhile, Richard Blumenthal is a senator from Connecticut. These two people have no direct connection, and her election wouldn't replace Blumenthal in any way. Luna's up against a stacked field of four other candidates in the primary, and then even if she won, she'd be facing Charlie Crist in the general election,
right,
who already beat her in 2020, 53-47. Mm. It's really exciting to see that we're back in the arguing about GOP primaries season on InfoWars. It's always so fun because Alex gets to bring in complete lunatics who have zero chance of winning, and he tries to pretend that they're way up in the polls. Seems like Roger's just hyper-focused on local races in Florida, though, which is good because, you know, think locally.
Keep him there. Keep him there.
But I don't know if this matters to Alex's audience, and I sense a little bit of racism going through this.
It does feel like an old racist man talking about local politics.
Uh-huh.
You could just write a letter to your local paper.
And this stuff about her military service, I mean, like, whatever. I don't know what the reality is, but if you're going to take issue with this, you got a lot of people with stolen valor in your ranks that you need to work out.
Start from the top and then go down, and we'll see how long it takes you to get to her.
Yeah, yeah. I think she's a small issue compared to some of these other weirdos.
Yeah.
So anyway, Alex sees a picture of this Anna Paulina Luna.
Now we're going to get real racist.
Oh, boy.
Big, big, big future news coming about her.
Well, she is attractive. What is she?
Say it again, please.
She is attractive. If she's not Hispanic, what is she?
Well, it's an excellent question. Her last name is Meyerhofer. That's her real name.
Question?
It's on her driver's license. She is not Hispanic.
Yeah, that's a weird question.
That's not a good question at all.
Gross question.
That's a creepy question.
So I'm not even going to descend into this like very clear racist signaling and try and discuss this, but I will say that just because Luna's birth name is Anna Meyerhofer, that is her father's surname, that doesn't mean that her mother may not have been entirely of Hispanic descent. It seems like Rogers is pulling at straws. Very racist straws.
Very racist straws.
So Luna was popular because she was supposed to be something like the GOP Trump world version of AOC, and it just didn't work out.
Mm-mm.
Charlie Kirk initially recruited her to do Hispanic outreach for Turning Point, and this led her to get the itch to run for office, which she did unsuccessfully in 2020. This cycle is repeating now, and I guess Trump is supporting her as he did in 2020, and Roger's racistly pissed off about this.
Wow.
Cool.
That's just... Well, you said she wasn't Hispanic, so what is she? The answer is person.
Right.
The answer is she is a person. She's a person just like you and me. We're all people, man.
Yeah. Yeah. That indicates such a bizarre train of thought on Alex's part.
I know. Like, hold on. Before I can even begin to discuss
her.
What
is this?
Before I can begin to discuss her as a human being, I must first know her genealogy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And there's also like this strange vibe of like she's trying to trick you.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, listen, GOP voters, this person isn't actually Hispanic. Are we against?
Yeah, it's very confusing.
Yeah.
So anyway, I was thinking about this because I cut out some of the redundancies, but a lot of Roger's appearance is threatening to sue people.
Sure.
He's going to sue everybody.
He's got a lot of suing.
Everybody's going down.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's time.
I expect us to get served at some point.
I can't wait.
But I kind of figured out what this was about.
But Alex, this is a change for me. I'm tired of being on defense. I'm tired of having to come on here in InfoWars and beg for people to support my legal defense to defend myself. Now help me go on the attack. Now help me go after these people, drag these mangy, unbathed, disgusting leftists into a courtroom and sue them and make them pay for what they have done.
Oh, my God.
It's a little too overt. It's a little too obvious. Mm. It wasn't paying the bills. People weren't excited about the legal defense funds anymore, so you try and rile people up and get them excited, promising that you're going to take these dirty leftists to court and make them pay. Then try and amp up the donations that way, and it doesn't matter when those cases never happen.
Doesn't matter.
And won't be successful
even
if they did. Right. Just trying to fundraise off the idea that you're going to sue people.
It's
kind of pathetic and exactly what I would expect from someone like Roger.
It's the fucking sequel.
Yeah.
If you enjoyed paying for my legal defense, wait until you pay for my legal offense.
Oh, and it's also more natural territory for Roger because his whole thing is like always be
the attack. Always be attacking.
Never be defending yourself.
Uh-uh.
And I think that he's had to. Because the consequences of him not doing so would be pretty high.
Real bad.
And so now he's getting back into the territory and the waters he's used to swimming in. And he's hoping he can make some money off
that. That's the problem whenever one of your whack-a-moles finds a new little hole, you know? It feels safe enough to pop back out again and you're just, ugh.
So I felt exhausted by this point in this episode.
Yeah.
We had the Stelter drama. We have Roger getting COVID and suing everybody.
Right.
And being a weirdo.
Right.
Being a racist weirdo.
Being a racist piece of shit.
And I wasn't ready for this.
Wow, We just got him for two segments. I really appreciate him coming on. I saw Jimmy Kimmel attacking him with an actor pretending that Mike Lindell had been put in prison because he was questioning the election. That's their big push.
Oh, God. Mike Lindell's on now.
I thought he was dead.
No.
What happened to him?
Oh, Mike Lindell.
Hasn't he done enough drugs to just knock him out for a while at least?
I am flabbergasted by the meaninglessness of this episode and how chock full it is of dangerous weirdos.
Amazing.
So anyway, Mike Lindell has a complaint, and that is that his bank doesn't want to work with him anymore. And so you got to tell your friends.
You guys, you go out there, you might have 100 friends or 500 friends or 5,000, whatever you got, you email them and you call them and you do this on a daily basis and tell them the real news that's going on, the stuff that we all need to hear about that you're not hearing on your terrible news outlet, Fox News. Because they don't talk about anything that's going on. They're not going to tell you that the bank have canceled me. You know, wouldn't that be news that a company, you know, and a charity and a network that's helping addicts, if the bank wants to cancel them? That should be headlines on Fox News.
So, Mike, you might want to take a minute and reflect on the fact that Fox News isn't providing the coverage that he wants because he's no longer a major source of their ad revenue.
Mm-hmm.
If he thought about this for a while, you might realize that no one really cares that much about the nonsense he spews. It's just in your financial interest to humor Mike when he's paying you a bunch of money.
Yeah.
He's here spreading the message he wants to on InfoWars because he's a sponsor. Like, back in the day, Marty Schachter could come on and do fucking limericks.
Yep.
Now
you got your time.
Mike can do whatever he wants. He's a sponsor. Alex can't be mad at him. So
nope.
He gets to come on and complain about the bank not wanting to work with
That's
him anymore.
So funny.
So it's sad.
Let that be a lesson to all of us. Never get addicted to the attention.
Right.
You know, because
right.
He's clearly addicted to it.
And never allow yourself to be deluded into thinking that time that you're paying for.
Yeah.
Anything that's happening in that is indicative of people's real response.
Yeah.
Like paying for ad time and then just bizarrely all of a sudden really being validated by how seriously Fox News takes your complaints.
Yeah.
Don't take that seriously.
Yeah.
You'll get lulled into a point where you think that there's more meaning to your shit than there is. And you learn the hard way that when you stop being one of their main advertisers,
yeah,
all of a sudden they don't seem to care about your bullshit that much.
It's so weird.
Yeah.
It's so weird. It's almost like if Julia Roberts had left Richard Gere at the end of the movie because their financial transaction had been completed.
Are you talking about Runaway Bride?
Exactly. Yeah.
Spiritual sequel. So anyway, Alex wants to talk about Hitler a little.
That's how the left plans with the social credit score to impoverish us and take control of us. This is what Hitler first did when he got in power the first 5 years was take his political enemies' banking away. And then you know what happened next. This is really dangerous.
It's nuts to listen to so much of this show because I start picking up on trends that might be subtle to casual listeners. For instance, Alex always says that whatever he's trying to build a narrative about was actually the first thing Hitler did. This is meant to lead the listener to the conclusion that if this thing Alex is yelling about is allowed to stand, then we're going to progress to the subsequent things that Hitler did. Here we see Alex saying that the first thing Hitler did was take away his enemy's banking and ability to do business. And that's because he's talking to Mike Lindell, who wants to complain about his bank account.
Right.
However, in the past, when he's been talking about gun-grabbing narratives, he's very insistent that the first thing Hitler did was take the guns. This is really just a cheap trick Alex is using to try and get his audience to think that his imaginary enemies are using the same model that Hitler used, regardless of what he's actually claiming they're doing.
Yeah, I mean, it would be that now, and I don't know if this is possible, but if there was like a document that Hitler had on like day one, like an executive order, and then he just like laid out all of it, you know, like the whole Nazi plan. So then technically you could say that the first thing he did was everything.
Sure.
You know?
Sure. I also think that it's kind of missing the point.
It could be missing the point.
Regardless of what Hitler did first, second, or third, I do think it's missing the larger point.
Yeah.
And I think Alex might not care about that point.
Yeah.
So, look, I have an apology to make.
You should.
To Mike Lindell.
Oh, no.
I didn't realize.
I take it back.
I didn't realize he's got the goods.
Alex, we have what they deleted. So this is going to, it's over. I'm telling everybody, when this comes out, and it's coming out this month, it is going to be game changer, okay? But our big goal is now, and all the states, by the way, the four big swing states could pull theirs elect. They're all working on pulling their electors down. They could, that could still happen. It could happen any day.
Any day now, states could pull down their electors, and then Trump will be president.
What? What?
I'm sorry. I should have taken Mike more seriously.
I can't. I mean, this guy, I think the thing about Mike, though, is he has to believe that literally everyone around him is insane. Right?
I think, yeah.
He has to, because there's no way that you can really believe in your mind that you have definitive proof that Trump is still the president, and be ignored even by Fox News and shit.
Well,
there's no way you can look at that rationally and think, well, obviously I'm the insane person.
I think some people are probably insane, and then easier to rationalize as everyone else is in on it. Everyone else
That's
is
true.
Like
That's
Fox
true.
News is now paid off.
Right.
They
right.
did what I said when I paid them, so someone else is just paying them more
exactly.
now. You could easily use that. But that requires self-awareness, and I'm not sure you get there. But you could just say, like, Soros is paying them to not take me seriously or something.
True.
But, yeah, I can't imagine what it must be like to be in a space where you're like, I have definitive proof.
I mean, it's the biggest news in the history of the world.
Right. I mean, he made a documentary about how the information he had would make a 9-0 Supreme Court case putting Trump into power.
And it was so close.
Yeah. And now this month, he's got even more proof of evidence and stuff, and Trump's going to be president.
I appreciate his can-do spirit.
It just keeps going.
It really doesn't.
Boy, it is annoying.
It is so fucking annoying.
So, Mike's concerned about the midterms, of course, because there's other ways people can vote.
Ooh.
In Utah, I was meeting with the Utah officials there. They did an experiment, a pilot program in 2020 in municipals in three different counties in Utah. You emailed in your vote or you texted in your vote. Did you hear that? They emailed in their vote or text messaged their vote in.
So Mike isn't being honest about this pilot program in Utah. You wouldn't text in or email in your vote. What they were exploring was a broadening of a system that uses blockchain to allow users to vote using their smartphones with an online platform. The way Mike is describing it is reductive, because he wants to belittle the idea and make it look like a clear plan to steal votes. The bill that was passed in late 2020 just allows municipalities, quote, to choose to permit a voter to vote by electronic means approved by the municipality's election officer. The Utah County Clerk/Auditor told Deseret News that they've been using this function for the past five elections with no problem, and that it has been particularly useful in allowing overseas voters, like sure. enlisted persons, to vote with less hassle.
Yeah.
It's all just bullshit.
Yeah. Upon reach for comment, the government said, surprisingly, this one actually works. No, this is a good one. This does look, we're just as shocked as you that this works.
Reach for comment, the Utah government said, Mike's gonna flip out on this one.
Oh boy.
Yeah. So in case you were concerned about me not telling the truth about Mike being a sponsor,
in closing, because I need funding and you need funding, we're both in the arena, plus we've got great products. We have promo code Alex at MyPillow.com. You have hundreds of amazing beds and slippers and shoes and sheets and towels. They're all amazing.
Yep. So he's got an affiliate link, got a promo code.
I just, you know, you want to live in a world where you don't have that juxtaposition right next to each other. Somebody being like, I know the politics and I'm going to get my president elected because everybody's cheating. And also, I sell towels and bedding and I sell everything.
It is a bit strange to just like zoom out and see that we have a pillow magnet on a radio show promoting that Trump could still become president 2 years after the election.
Like
to a guy who is a affiliate program with his pillow company and is a insidious right wing conspiracist propagandist.
Yeah. I mean, in a reasonable world, everyone could just step back and be like, well, whatever that is wrong.
I've been wrestling with this. I do think that at a certain point, I obviously we can't really, because we focus on these kinds of worlds and talk about this information space. But I honestly think that maybe there should be a blanket, like people like Mike Lindell, people like Alex, people like Roger, don't even engage. Don't tweet about him. Whatever they're saying is not, like, Mike's on here saying that he's got
the electors
within the next
can
month,
still be brought
and within
down.
The next month, this big news is going to come out.
Yeah.
Maybe don't even engage with these claims and stuff. They're just people who they've cried wolf so many times that engaging is kind of pointless.
What are we doing?
Yeah.
What are we doing? We're playing clips from 2003 that could have been today. You know,
true.
Like, what are we doing?
Yeah. So we got a little bit here at the end.
Okay.
We've gotten through the sticky
stackies.
The sticky stackies that are
2022 sticky stackies.
Roger Stone, Mike Lindell, Stelter.
Right.
And now Alex closes the show talking a little bit about a news story that is about Jen Psaki, the White House spokesperson, talking about how Russia, they have information that Russia is going to pull up a false flag to get into Ukraine.
Great.
There was this conversation that went on, Alex has a weird feeling about this.
Okay.
Okay, let's go ahead and get to this. This is a big deal. Video, Biden admin says Russia is going to carry out a false flag attack on itself to justify invading Ukraine. Now, I don't have any examples of Russia staging false flags.
Yes, you do.
What? What?
You absolutely
fuck
do.
Fuck you!
His entire early career.
Fucking fuck me.
Yeah, he believed that Putin did the apartment bombings.
Of course. The biggest false flag there is
that
in Russia.
That was something that Alex was very, very clear about until he wasn't, until he decided Putin was great.
You know the guy who runs everything?
Yeah.
It's began on a false flag.
At least according to most of Alex's career, that is absolutely the case. So he has a misinterpretation, though, of what Psaki is saying.
Okay.
So I'm not saying the Russians couldn't do this, but from these liars like Psaki, I don't believe a word she says, but there's the admissions that false flags exist. Here she is.
We have information that indicates Russia has already pre-positioned a group of operatives to conduct a false flag operation in eastern Ukraine.
There's this interesting dynamic. Alex is insisting that this is like them finally admitting that false flags exist. And no one has ever said that false flags don't exist. They just complain that Alex thinks everything is a false flag.
The problem that I am experiencing right now is that I know that there have been Russian false flags.
Hmm.
I know there have been United States false flags.
Sure.
I know that even throughout history, plenty of false flags have happened.
Yeah.
Right? The one time that Alex could just be like, holy shit, just anything other than, well, I don't think that there's that this is actually happening. How dare you tell me that the government is false flagging a false flag?
True. I agree with you. I'm mostly more interested, though, in the pretending that people said they didn't exist.
No, I understand.
And then finally Jen Psaki is coming out and being like, whoa.
The government's finally admitting it.
That's not the dynamic that's going on at all here.
Oh, boy.
Very dumb. But not as dumb as our last bit of
I lied.
There's more in the stackies.
Okay.
There was something that was sticking to the
stackies?
Yeah, so we got to peel that off real quick before we get out of here.
Got to go see our video about that on Band Out Video from the Sunday show. Here's the column. California should abolish parenthood in the name of equity. In the name of equality. And it goes on from there. So my brakeman, this is the guy pushing it. I mean, this is the sabotage of humanity going on.
So this article is an editorial written by a guy named Joe Matthews titled, quote, California should abolish parenthood in the name of equity. Alex is reporting this as a serious suggestion, but if he'd taken the time to read the article, he would have seen that it's obviously satire. Joe brings up the inequalities in rich and poor families in terms of the ability to bring up children, and then says, quote, my solution, making raising your own children illegal, is simple. And while we wait for the legislation to pass, we can act now. The rich and poor should trade kids, and homeowners might swap children with their homeless neighbors. Now, I recognize that some naysayers will dismiss such a policy as ghastly, even totalitarian, but my proposal is quite modest, a fusion of traditional philosophy and today's most common political obsessions. Him saying that his proposal is quite modest should be an immediate tip-off that he isn't being sincere.
I mean, it's almost too on the nose.
Yes.
Although, on the other hand, even that isn't enough for people to not take it as satire.
Yeah, it's a little bit clunky if you're trying to have, like, high literature satire.
Right. No.
But for an op-ed, it's fine.
Yeah.
The point that the author seems to be making is that the ultimate end result of many of the ideas that are pushed in the name of equality could lead to negative consequences, like someone actually having the idea of universal orphanhood. The last line of this piece really sums that up. Quote, "But don't pay those critics any mind, because they just can't see how our relentless pursuit of equity might birth a brave new world." Again, on the nose. Anyway, Alex not only doesn't understand the difference between an editorial and a news story, he also can't tell when articles are sincere or if they're satire, because he doesn't read any of the stuff he reports on. If all you know about the article here is the headline, you'd report it like Alex does, because he's stupid and lazy, and he's reporting a satirical article as real. It's it's a bummer.
Oh man,
yeah.
This like you couldn't cram any more references in there. This is a little swift, Jonathan. I think we're having a little bit of a difficult, you know, like just really hammer it home.
Mm-hmm.
Make the lines an acrostic too. Have it say a secret message along the side. That'd be great.
Have it be Bill THX1138.
Yes, absolutely.
So, come to the end of this adventure, and I think that just about everything was stupid, but some real developments. I mean, Roger apparently had COVID, and he's going to sue everybody.
Everybody.
Mike Lindell.
Well, as long as he has the money to do so, and you're going to need to provide it for
him. Sure, there's that. Mike Lindell is going to prove within the next month that the election was stolen.
Yep.
Or...
Well... He's going to need your money to do that, so you better go buy pillows.
He might lose that money because he's also getting sued by Smartmatic and Dominion.
Yeah,
Alex can't control himself when he's trying to critique Brian Stelter.
Nope.
And all of the pieces of evidence that he provides about anything is either complete bullshit or a satire article that he doesn't actually realize is fake.
But he didn't call me ugly this time.
Oh, no. Yes, he did. He called you Mr. Super Potato Head.
Hey, Mr. Super Potato Head isn't ugly. He's got a very well-proportioned body.
Yeah, I don't know. So, look, we'll be back. I wanted to cover a couple episodes on this episode, but I just couldn't. There's too much going on. And so we will check in and see how Alex is doing on Monday. But... until then, we have a website.
We do. It's knowledgefight.com.
Yep. We're also on Twitter.
We are on Twitter. It's @knowledge_fight and @GoToBedJordan.
We'll be back. But until then, I'm Neo. I'm Leo. I'm DZX Clark. I'm Daryl Rundis.
And now here comes the sex robots.
Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
I love you.